Good morning, y'all. Welcome to IT Live, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I am Texas Homer. That's Ian Boyd. On Wednesday morning show, we talk schematics. We will be discussing what you got, man.
Is that the normal cadence of when the music cuts?
I don't know.
It didn't come on a resolved beat. And I was like, is that what normally like?
I have no idea. I'm so used to it now, I don't even really listen to it. I just wait till the screen changes and then start talking. We're going to talk linebackers first, the linebacker room, but what we want to see from them next year, how it could change schematically. And then Sark and his presser said skillfully that numbers are down at certain positions, one of those being tight ends. So then we're going to talk about what we actually need from the tight end position. And we actually might need more than one guy. And then if we have some time at the end, we can talk some other things about Sark's presser. But first things first, let's talk linebackers, Ian. Which I think we're both kind of excited for this room.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be unique. And they also said, I can't remember if it was in Eric's piece this morning or if Sark said it in the presser, but it was something that Brad Spence, he's not just a hit and run guy. And I was like, oh, I thought he was a pass rush guy. I didn't even realize. They were saying basically that he can cover. That sentence before that was saying, like, he can run and hit. And now you got pass rush. So I think the depth is even more kind of interesting there. But let's start with your thesis here, Ian. How we're going to develop the room. Losing like a David Bender, right? And then gaining some NFL talent.
Yeah. They're in great shape. Bender, awesome program guy. Had a big feature on him on the website by RT Young this last weekend about Benda's journey at Texas and all he put in, now his journey to get to the NFL. All that aside, the linebacker room is losing him, but it's going to be meaningfully better than it was last year.
Yeah. It's that and edge to me are the strength of the defense.
Yeah, it's so strong that they moved the starting weak side edge to inside linebacker. Yeah. That's how strong the edge room is.
Yeah.
And then, and now the starting Buck Edge, which is theoretically the best linebacker on your team, is now presumptive starting weak side linebacker on the inside. Yeah. So they are loaded. Connor, and I've kind of been wondering if they could potentially get into some like 3-3 stack kind of stuff. I don't know if we'll get into that today.
I think that's a fun article for you to write.
Like, what if you had it? What if your starting lineup was like Simmons, Brevard,
Burke,
maybe, yeah, and then Hill, Moore, LaFell, or something like that.
Yeah,
that could be pretty interesting.
Yeah, write that.
Fine, I will.
All right, that's your assignment, dude. Get on that.
I will.
But it will be interesting, yeah, to think about that. Have we ever played it?
Under Sark?
Yeah.
No.
Did Moore play linebacker at UTSA, or was he strictly a DN pass rusher?
Well, he played edge. But they at UTSA plays the Todd Orlando tight front defense, and the edge is a stand-up player, and he drops off the ball a lot, and he played like the weak side and the boundary, and he played the field side like nickel for UTSA some as well.
Oh, okay.
So that's not inside linebacker. It's not at all a one-to-one to inside linebacker. Because when you're out there, you don't have to read, like, blocks and running back trajectories, the triangle they call it, where you're, like, reading three different moving pieces at the same time to figure out where you're supposed to be. That's really hard, and you do not do that at those 3-4 outside linebacker positions. But it was a linebacker position and not just, like, a hand-in-the-dirt defensive end. And he dropped into coverage all the time at UTSA, and he was good at it because he's an awesome athlete.
Dropped into like flats coverage or like true like defending ends?
True defending what?
Ends, like dropping back on digs, like actual coverage, or is he just go boxing out to like the flat?
I mean, curl flat.
Okay, curl flat. But I'm talking about when linebackers are actually dropping, like a kind of making them layer like a 15-yard dig type of dropping.
Well, I mean, hopefully they don't ask anybody to do a lot of that in a complex way. He can get back. He can backpedal and get depth. That's not a problem.
Okay. That's what I'm curious about, because I know all edges will drop to like a weak side flat or something. That doesn't mean a ton to me. But, I mean, they are going to make you drop because they're not – they're.
But he's good. He was good at it. He wasn't just like – he would drop to his spot every now and then and then kind of look around and then watch somebody catch the ball in front of him.
Yeah, that's always fun to watch any linebacker do that. You're just like, what's the point? And really, they've just become physical obstacles to the throw at that point. Like, they're just hoping you layer it over. But otherwise, they're just like a lawn ornament.
Yeah.
No, okay, so here's a little bit of a thing that's important, just a tiny bit. We had a line of defensive tackles that kept these linebackers uncovered and able to maneuver. We're not sure if we have that this season. Couldn't be, but we're not sure. How is that going to affect play? What is that going to force evolutionarily for the linebackers?
Well, hopefully they still have it, because like Canoe and Brevard – and probably Shaw. There was an interesting note about Shaw in the press here we could talk about. But Brevard and Canoe are pretty good, like, get in the way, cover up the linebacker type guys. Like, they're kind of like Bill Norton was not a super heralded recruit in the portal. But he was expected to be good, and he proved to be good at being a guy that can, like, anchor and eat blocks and protect your linebackers. And I think that both of those guys are like that. You notice that Sark said he was a little bit worried about a recurring knee issue with Shaw.
Yeah, I didn't love hearing that.
And he came in at 350 pounds.
Yeah.
Why do you think you got knee issues, bro?
Yeah.
So I was actually kind of like, when they had those three guys and I watched them all, I was like, I don't know if they need anybody else in the portal. They just need like January, Terry, and Hills. They need like one of those guys to be worth playing in the two deep, and they're pretty good. And then I heard that, and I was like, oh, you better go get somebody else. Shaw's even going to play this year, you know?
Yeah. Well, it seems like everyone's on a pitch count, man. Because they were saying, Eric reported this morning that Hill's on a pitch count. Shaw's on a pitch count. Of course, on offense, seems like everyone's hurt. So it's like kind of scary, because – the big theme of the presser was, we're very, very young, said seven different ways, right? Of like, hey, we lack experience. And amongst the very, very young, we still like are having a lot of pitch counts, a lot of limitations on guys. Now, most of those guys are older, so you're getting more reps for the younger guys. But to be young and still most of our guys not getting a ton of all the reps is interesting. Maybe it's going to help us in week 14, you know? Down the road, but I just think that's going to lead to some early mental errors, probably.
I mean, they're going to recruit over them in the portal some. Like, Hill, I'm not worried about Hill at all. He doesn't need, like, physical reps. He just needs the mental stuff to keep advancing his mind for the game, as we're going to get into. Hill had, like, a gazillion injuries by the end of the year. So they're just trying to get that guy.
And also at that position specifically, I actually like getting into the depth. Like, I like seeing the guys behind Hill and getting them reps. So, like, you know, I like getting Spence reps. I like Ty Anthony Smith getting reps. Like, that's actually good for me. I enjoy that. And I want to keep those guys engaged, because they're going to be good players. And I don't want them just to get stacked in the depth chart and not feel like they're getting reps.
I should have included Brad Spence in this table.
Dude, I didn't even realize. I've never looked at Anthony Hill's stat line. That's a pretty insane stat line, dude.
It's awesome.
Dude, 113 tackles, 17 tackles for loss, 8 sacks. Is that right? 8 sacks? And then 1 interception, 4 forced fumbles. That's a nuts stat line, dude.
He was – He made an enormous leap from his freshman year. But as PK said of him after his freshman year, like, you're a hell of a player, but you're not much of a linebacker.
Yeah.
Last year he was like, he was a pretty good linebacker in the sense that he was like, he wasn't like James Laurinaitis in terms of like understanding the position, but he was way more advanced than he was as a freshman, way more advanced.
Yeah.
And then he's so fast and powerful that if he can just be anywhere near the right spot most of the time, then he does wild stuff.
His closing speed still wows me. Like when I watch it on the field, you know, someone catches a pass, how he can catch up that quickly, especially for that body type, right? He's a big, strong looking kid.
It doesn't even look like he's moving fast on TV.
Yeah, it's weird. It's,
but he's, it's just like, there, and they're going like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, and he was doing that at Denton Ryan too, man. He's just, he's awesome, dude.
Yeah, amazing, amazing player. He could be just, we have two guys at the same time who could make an argument for being Mount Rushmore all-time Texas linebackers, if you include Colin Simmons.
Yeah, we'll include him as a 3-4.
Because you got, I'm not even sure what the, I think there's probably a bunch of guys from the 80s on some of those teams that are in consideration that I don't know as well. Obviously, Nobis is like the George Washington of Texas linebackers. And then Derek Johnson for us that remember the aughts. And then I don't think anyone since Derek Johnson is going to be able to hold off Anthony Hill for what he could do.
Because you're getting this incredible athlete mixed with this production line. You know, like, it'd be different if you're like, you know, Hill's an amazing athlete, but he doesn't know what he's doing. There's an argument. But now you're getting, he's an amazing athlete and he's incredibly productive. So that's tough.
I underestimated him out of high school in a big way.
I live in Denton, so I knew what was up with him. They started talking about him a while ago. It was him and like JT Sanders. You start hearing about them when they're like 7. You know, like I remember who was the quarterback for Oklahoma State? Spencer.
Yeah.
Why am I blanking on his name? Anyways, my best friend was his
Spencer Sanders.
My best friend was his chaperone on a trip to the zoo in 6th grade. And he was telling me, he's like, this kid's going to be good. So, dude, I'm telling you, like, this scouting starts very early around here. Like, you hear about these kids. Like,
he picked up an acorn and took out the alpha monkey.
In one throw,
the alpha monkey was on his back.
They just like the cut of his jib, I guess, how he was commanding people to walk to the giraffe exhibit, I guess. But,
I know somebody that taught Sam Ellinger in middle school. And they were like, this is a leader of men.
I know. That's what I'm telling you. Like, you know it kind of early. You're like, hey, watch out for this kid. And then, of course, in like Pee Wee, you're already like, they know what's up. So, yeah, I start hearing about these kids like 5-6 years before they even come on the scene. All right. So, we have Hill's crazy ability. We had some other good. And then Trey Moore, 5.5 sacks at his edge position. And then solid seasons, too, from Benda and LaFau.
Yep.
All right.
Benda and LaFau would both flash periodically.
Yep.
And Hill would flash all the time.
Ian, let's do a quick thought exercise. Rank the 5 true road games in terms of difficulty. Georgia is his 1. Ohio State is his 2. His 3rd is Florida. His 4th is Miss Tape. And his 5th is Kentucky. Any thought of putting Florida at that 2 game? One, Florida. I don't know, man. I kind of agree with you. I want Florida to be higher, but when I think of Georgia and Ohio State, But I also wonder if Ohio State's going to be kind of Michigan-esque. But also, we don't have the team that we had when we did Michigan. I honestly, man, I probably agree with your list. Ian, I know you can't agree right off the base. So what do you have to change here?
I don't know if I can disagree either.
Wow.
We don't know the time of the Florida and Georgia games in terms of, like, if they're night games or not. I think any of those first three getting made into a night game could potentially boost it to number one, barring catastrophic in-season injuries for the opponent.
Dude, you would think. I mean, Ohio State has to be – it's going to be big noon because they own that game. That was part of the deal. So that one will be a noon. I don't know how you wouldn't put Georgia at night.
Also, week one, I feel like it's a huge advantage for Texas, especially with all these linebackers that we're talking about right now and blitzers going up against. And that's, I don't know if it's real or not, but right now.
Is that a real quarterback battle that they're, or are they just
playing? I don't know. I don't know. But right now, Ryan Day is saying that Julian Saiyan is not Super Saiyan yet. And he's not put Corinne Holtz or whoever the other guy is behind him.
Okay.
So, and they're replacing their tackles with G5 dudes that are probably really good, but I don't know.
Well, but they got to also, they got to do Florida at night because you have Arch Manning and then you have DJ Lagway, and Lagway's was doing, has a Gatorade commercial. So they're, you know, it's like they're, those are two big names. So it's like you would have to do that at night.
But Georgia's probably like that too. And Georgia has, like the selling point in that game, well, it might be Gunnar Stockton versus Arch Manning, but it's probably going to be Kirby Smart and the dogs, and then like highlights of whoever their new run of pass rushers are.
Yeah.
Versus Arch Manning and the horns. So that one could very easily be a prime time as well.
Yeah.
Also, they're like right now, Georgia is kind of our like oil.
It's our kryptonite.
They're like our obstacle. So.
Yeah, they're going to play that up. Can Sark beat Kirby Smart? That's how you sell the fight.
I think Nelson's got it right.
Florida will probably be 330 because they got Bama, Georgia same week. That is tough. And Bama, Georgia is going to sell.
But Bama, Georgia could also be that 330 slot. So,
but yeah, that was a solid list. Before we keep going, guys, let's hear a word from Academy Sports and Outdoors.
Days like this, the anticipation's half the fun. The call to adventure. Possibilities in every direction.
Look at that.
The stories you'll bring back. Right. Even the true ones. And always, already, you can't wait until next time. From first catch to biggest catch of the season, this is where it starts. Academy Sports and Outdoors. Have fun out there.
All right. Let's look at some coverage plays. LaFau and Trey Moore. Okay. Let's see who's where. Okay. Trey dropping to the flats. Okay. I don't love the backpedal here, but I love when he turns and runs to the.
It's not Moore.
Yeah.
He's right on it. And he's like relating well to the guys that are actually in his zone.
Yeah, he is relating well. But I'm just talking about pure like linebacker backpedal. This looks, feels like an edge backpedal. But when he turns and runs right here, that's really impressive to me. Is Leonga in this clip as well?
Yeah, he's right there.
Right here?
I'm pointing. Yes. Yeah. So he's like a hook.
Yeah.
That obviously tackle was decent and Moore cleaned it up. But the drops are good. The closes are pretty good. They were very, very good in this match three stuff last year at same kind of wait and see, like take away the dangerous stuff, close, and make them convert on third down. It's good stuff. Only a three-man rush on this one.
Yeah. And then we got to go through all this. I think this is going to be the run game now, right?
Yep. So on this one, Hill is on top. So he's like on the hash mark. He's way out of the picture. Yep, here? That's Hill.
Okay.
So it's only LaFell in the box and then Taft dropping late in the boundary.
Okay.
And you can see the approach. The formation doesn't matter for this. The linebackers would usually like maintain some depth and watch and wait for the running back to commit before they would hit the front. So like he could have tried to run through a gap because there was an opening in the B gap to just like try to run
right there
through or make the lineman commit to him. But he doesn't do that. He's like waiting so that he doesn't get caught.
So is this the same style of linebacking as Kirby Smart's thought process where the second level is supposed to be the second level for a reason?
For the chat,
if you go watch some clinics with Kirby Smart, when he talks about his defense, he doesn't want his linebackers to go plug gaps immediately and fit into the line because his whole point of a second-level defender is to be a second-level defender. So they'll come up a little bit, but they'll wait because his point is if the linebackers immediately match and then there is a hole, that running back, if they get full speed, can blow by everyone, and it defeats the point of having linebackers in Kirby Smart's system. So I'm seeing if Texas is kind of mirroring that philosophy. Yeah.
I think that's fair. I mean, for sure, if somebody pulls, then Smart's guys trigger.
Right.
But on like a zone play like this, I think that may be right.
But that's why like Kirby Smart wouldn't tell you to just run in and fit right there.
Right.
And then Taft run in and fit right there. He wants to see what the running back's going to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is consistent. And then if the nose is good enough at fighting that double team, which in this case he's decent, he does a pretty decent job, then you're only going to give up maybe 2 to 4 yard run. And then you just live to play the next down. So that's how they play it. It works pretty well.
All right, so this is Hill lurking behind a LaFell run blitz. So LaFell's going to run up and to the line, and then Hill's going to fill, I guess, behind him.
He mirrors the running back behind him.
Yeah.
Which you'd think like blitz Hill, right? But he's actually kind of invaluable as the cleanup hitter.
As the tracker?
Behind it, yeah. So they would blitz like Benda and LaFell on these inside linebacker blitzes a lot and then let Hill clean up behind him. You can only imagine how that could look with Trey Moore as the blitzer. Figure that looks pretty good.
Yeah, I like how they route this traffic too, right? Just look how many guys are around the ball. Whenever he goes down. Good stuff.
Notice also for everybody, it's usually Taft that's in the box and Makuba that goes deep. So I don't think anybody needs to be sold on Taft at this point, but he's not the Dylan Haynes wait back behind everyone and pick off 5 passes on overthrows and deflected passes. Like Taft is like
in the mix.
He's a box. He is usually a box safety, which, you know, hopefully he can gain some weight.
There's some plays that crack you up where he's all heart, but that running back's just bigger. And with Taft.
All right. You see him in person and you're like, this guy could absolutely be bigger. He's not. He doesn't look like an enormous football player. Usually, like, you see a football player, like Taft, on camera, and you're like, they don't seem that big. And then you see him in person, and you're like, oh, wait, yes, they are.
It's like NBA players. When I, as a kid, I thought they were all 5'11", because they're all the same height. Really, they're all 7 feet tall.
Taft is surprisingly tall in person, at least to me. I mean, I'm short. But he's not, like, surprisingly, like, huge and thick.
Yeah. I love how you always grade players based on if they're taller or bigger than you, opposed to like if they're bigger than an NFL product, you know?
Well, you know, Connor, how tall are you, Connor?
5'10", 5'11", somewhere around there.
Most of us, when we see, it's more true of basketball players, but most of us, when we see these guys in person, it's always a little jarring at first how much bigger they are.
It's absurd.
Except for when I was on campus, I would see AJ Abrams and DJ Augustine. And it was like shocking how not big they were.
Yeah.
Like, you knew they weren't big. They looked small on TV, but you're like, yeah, but and you'd see them in person and it was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. So this is what's interesting. So we showed kind of the wait and see approach, right? Not really rushing in there. But yeah. There could be some changes here schematically that could fundamentally change how the linebackers play. So what's going on there?
There could be it could be a few ways this could happen. One is that they could choose to play them a little more aggressively, which I don't think they're necessary, like in the run fits. I think they're still going to teach the Georgia style, right? I don't think they're going to move away from that. This is for you, I think.
Yeah.
The coverage could look different. And we could also see them just play faster as a result of being more experienced. Like, if Anthony Hill sees an opportunity to blow something up, I don't think they're going to tell him not to, you know?
So that's schematic, a more of a man defense than a cover three style defense changes that?
Well, it definitely doesn't coverage, obviously. Instead of dropping back to take away windows and then closing, you would match that running back much quicker.
How does that change? Yeah, so the change in relation to the running back. If it's man, if that running back goes out either way, you have to follow him. Immediately, or else they're going to out leverage you. And Sark does that to people all the time in man. So that's a big thing. Do you like that style better? If we can play it well, of course.
The man coverage style?
Yeah.
Not necessarily, but it's kind of Dwayne Aquinas' thing. So I wouldn't be shocked if we saw it.
Yeah.
Like, I like the match three and like, take away everything dangerous and make them prove it underneath, especially when you have like Anthony Hill cleaning up. And then like next year, like, you know, Trey Moore and Jelani McDonald chasing things down. But Aquinas tends to like to be more aggressive and put more on the plate of the safeties. So that's great if you're good at it. I will see if they actually do that or not. They might not lean too far in that direction, but that has been Aquinas' MO. So, and they were a little more man heavy for sure when Nansen and Aquinas were together at Arizona.
All right, let's look at your example of this running down an outside zone play. So
You can't wait and see on outside zone.
Yeah. So they're going to run it to the left here. All right, there's the foul. He makes the tackle. So he's coming from the backside here?
Yep.
Yeah. So this is the foul. They're running outside zone, so everyone's running this way. So he's coming from the backside. Gets through the trash well versus some big athletes. He's able to actually turn around right before the hit, too. It's important. Overruns, whoop, turns around.
Gilbo and Barron both forced that inside really, really well.
Yeah, they did. The team defense, man, like you were just seeing like earlier the play where they route on the run blitz and they route them to Hill and they keep them inside. You just get an appreciation for this defense last year when you rewatch these clips.
Yeah, you didn't see busted leverage very often.
No. And really, man, I feel like Jahdae Barron was like changed that for us. Like even at nickel, when he's playing nickel, like it never felt like anybody got outside of him.
Yeah. Jahdae Barron was.
He's going to be he's all time Longhorn for me, dude. I love Jahdae Barron.
He deserved the Thorpe Award.
And like I said, for a player to call it and actually get it, like almost never happens. Athletes can be so delusional, you know. I'm going to win the Thorpe. It's like, all right, buddy. And then he goes and immediately wins the Thorpe. He's just an impressive kid.
Remember when poor Brecken Hager said he wasn't going to cut his hair until Texas had won the Big 12 championship?
We're like, hey, man. Gonna be a while. But athletes say some wild stuff, you know, because
I thought they would get it.
Dude, it just cracks me up. Whenever it's the whole culture of it, you know, like you gotta say it, then you can achieve it. And 99% of the time it's like delusional, but not with Jahdae. All right. So that's the linebacker room. That's what we're looking to see more of. We want to see Trey Moore, LaFau, Hill. We might go to more man stuff. That'll be interesting, but the ability to run blitz will be cool. The ability to just blitz will be awesome. Any final things about linebackers?
And just finally, we may see faster, more aggressive play just because they know
they're older.
So like, even if they're teaching them to be a little bit hesitant in general against certain styles of runs, they still might play it faster and more aggressive because they just know what they're looking at. Like Jalen Ford was very wait and see in 2022. And he made a lot of his tackles just because he'd be playing back and then he would run things down and clean things up. And then in 2023, his numbers actually went down a little bit. People were like, oh, what happened to Jalen Ford? But when you watched him, he made a lot more plays a lot closer to the line of scrimmage because he knew what he was seeing and he would trigger faster. And it was actually a better player, even though his stats weren't as impressive. He didn't have as many picks either. But.
Well, that was the problem. Remember when Ford had that crazy stat line that year? And he's like, hey, I'm going to come back. And, you know, some of the arguments were like, well, you're not going to beat that stat line. It's like, that's not what it's about, man. The NFL's not purely looking for that stat line. You've done the stat line that year, and then the next year they want to see you fill the holes in your game.
Those stat lines are how you make all Big 12 before you're a senior.
Yep.
They're not how you impress NFL scouts.
Right.
Yeah.
And it is man, I love those lists. They're awesome. The all whatever lists are just names that reporters know the most. It's like it's all about name recognition. You can just have a player have a good freshman year, and then he can suck his sophomore and junior year. It doesn't matter. He'll get all Big 12 or all SEC as a senior because he was known for that many years. All right, guys. Before we keep going, let's hear from David McClellan.
I'm just going to say, guys, you probably need a fiduciary financial advisor, and I've got the guy for you. His name is David McClellan with Forum Financial. He works broadly and deeply with his clients as a financial life coach, and he should know something about coaching because he won several national championships as a swimmer for the University of Texas. He specializes in financial planning and has contributed numerous articles to Kipling on the topic of retirement tax bombs. So contact David today to be your fiduciary financial planner and schedule a 1-hour consultation to assess your financial situations. The free consultation is available, so just give him a call. The number is 312-933-8823. That's 312-933-8823. His email is also in the description below.
All right. Sark diplomatically phrased transfer portal needs as numbers being down at positions. He said it about defensive tackle. He said it about wide receiver. And he said it about tight end. Fair enough. But what's significant about phrasing it that way, Ian, opposed to just saying we need better tight ends?
Well, I liked that he said the tight ends and the defensive tackles and the wide receivers, he said for each of them, our numbers are not where we need them to be, implying like
it's purely accounting issue.
It's what if somebody gets hurt? We don't have enough guys.
Yeah.
If you look at the numbers in those rooms, the numbers are fine. Yeah. The problem is that the players aren't good enough yet. Right? Like they have, how many scholarship tight ends do they have now? Like 4 or 5?
Shannon, Winston, Washington. Who else?
Isidore Newman.
Will Randall.
Will Randall. And they're going to have Townsend.
Oh, they're going to have Townsend. You're right. And then they have the walk-on legend who we want.
Yeah, who me and you are the only people that have ever mentioned his name.
Yeah. Ridge Barker, baby. Ridge Barker.
Ridge Barker. They have plenty of tight ends. The problem is that they're not good enough to play this year. Like, we all think Winston and Townsend will be, like, those guys could be really good down the line. Jordan Washington, we think, could be awesome down the line.
But
they're not ready yet.
And why is he not ready?
Well, he's, I mean.
Yeah, collarbone.
He broke his collarbone. It's hard to interpret that any other way other than he broke his collarbone.
Yeah, they're not saying that explicitly. We're not reporting that. But they did say that it's a bone issue. And that bones take however long they take. And then it was something about a shoulder injury a week ago is how they are, the initial reports were. So it's just, yeah, something got broke. A bone got broke up here.
Something happened to a bone.
Right.
That is his collarbone.
Yeah, that would seem like, yeah.
It's broken or bruised or something.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like I've ever heard, maybe there is such a thing as a bruised collarbone. I've never heard of that before. But
so Jordan Washington, our one big hope, right, hasn't been able or won't be able to practice for a little while. So that's where that's frustrating too.
Yes.
And then behind that, you have Spencer Shannon, who we're just not sure is ready yet. And then the rest is these young guys.
I think Spencer Shannon will probably be ready to be a time to go run the ball, run the clock out. Or maybe a goal line and line blocker. I think he might be good at that this year. He's not a every down tight end at all. He's like, he can't play off the ball because he's too tall. And he's not a receiving threat at all. He could be useful at this is the thing that you don't really have to do because you have Arch Manning. And you can run like option stuff. Like Sark already had a billion ways to help his tight ends block. And now he has like the ultimate cheat code to add, which is the quarterback keeper option.
Yeah.
Texas has never in the Sark era been better positioned to get away with playing a super mediocre blocker who's a good receiving weapon. And then the only old experienced tight end who could maybe be aging into playing is the guy who's not that, but it's like strictly an inline blocker. It's not ideal, Connor. It's not what you want.
Yeah. And then, like we said, we're hearing good things of Winston in practice, but Winston's super young. And then Townsend's not even going to be here. He's going to show up in the summer. So, like we said, we're not saying that the future of the room is in jeopardy. That's not what we're saying. What we're saying about playing SEC ball right now, there's big questions. And then Sark also let us know that he agrees by saying the numbers are down at that room. We're going to need some guys. And I originally thought we just need one tight end, but it's looking like potentially we could even take two.
I would take two. Okay, someone says it's not a broken collarbone for Washington. Okay. So he's got some kind of bone issue.
In the upper, it was shoulder last week.
He said, what did he say? Can you scroll down to the quote?
Which one?
The one about Jordan Washington. It's a little lower in the article.
Oh, in the article. I thought you were talking in the chat.
No.
I was like, what are you talking about?
Unfortunately, he had a collarbone issue. Scroll back up. He went past it. Fortunately, he had a stop. Fortunately, he had a collarbone issue. We'll get back here. Bones take what they take to heal. It's not a ligament issue or anything like that. Okay, so it's a collarbone issue, but it's not a broken collarbone. So it's a bruised collarbone. It's a stress fractured collarbone. Like, what are we?
Yeah, something that's taking him off the field. That's all we care about functionally.
I have my suspicions. I have noticed with Texas in particular, it's probably true for every school, the less specific they are about the injury, the more likely it is it's one of the worst case scenarios.
Yeah, they do. They don't help themselves by the vagaries, right?
If it's something that's like,
it invites speculation.
If it's something that's not that bad, they're usually like more specific.
But remember last week, it was pretty consistent amongst all the outlets that it wasn't some serious thing. Like he would just be. So I don't know if like, you know, medical tests came later and it was more serious or what. But I remember last week being like, it's shoulder, but he's going to be fine. And then how Sark says it with the bone, whatever. I'll quit speculating.
He could have a broken collarbone and be back for fall camp.
Yeah, you could.
So it doesn't really matter. The only thing we're not trying to argue that Jordan Washington is secretly like broken and can't play this season. The only point is from Sark's quote,
he needed reps.
It seems pretty clear that he needed these spring reps and we know that he needed the spring and summer reps because we know that he's not ready yet and now he's not going to get them.
Yeah.
And that's going to make it that much harder. You already needed a tight end in the portal in case Washington got injured again or didn't end up being good enough. You need, I think, two. I would have said one, and now I think you need as many as you can get.
Then what do you need out of those tight ends, though?
Well, this is the good news, which is that because Sark's playbook is very generous to the tight end, and because Arch Manning can make it easier to block the front without asking as much of your tight end, they can go get like they can go get any flex tight end that wants to come. They need somebody that's like older and experienced and knows how to execute different blocks from different angles and positions. Like, but they only need them for the head knowledge. They don't need exceptional blocking ability.
Just to make sure he gets in front of X guy.
Yeah, and we'll make sure if we can be sure that you'll block the right guy, we'll make sure that the right guy is the right guy for you. You know?
Yeah.
We'll make sure that the right guy is someone that you can block and it's not a huge ask. I think they could also 100% get away with playing a fullback type guy.
That's who I want, man. I want a fullback bruiser, and I want him to leak out on little flat routes in the red zone. Like
that. But he could be like not a bruiser. He could be like a fake bruiser, like some of those Oklahoma guys that everybody remembers so well.
Yeah.
A lot of them, like you would watch them, and they were very rarely asked to actually make difficult blocks. It's not like they were. Like,
they weren't running up in the A gaps. Yeah.
Yeah, they were not North Dakota State A gap power.
Yeah. Guys. No, they were all, and they were a big. They almost the blocking for Oklahoma was almost just a setup. So they would like, you know, between the 20s, they would make them do these blocking assignments just so that could turn into a route in the red zone and they would score.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the guy that you want. You're two of them. You want two guys exactly like that for this roster next year. And they, Cade Brewer would be fine.
I heard someone ask on your thread on InsideTexas.com. Check it out, guys. Was losing Amari Nyheimblack significant?
Nyheimblack would have been perfect. I don't know. Nyheimblack is the kind of guy you kind of wonder if he's the kind of guy where, like we said, if you are good enough at blocking, if you know the right guy to block, we'll make sure that we give you the right guy to block. I don't know if Nyheimblack knew who the right guy to block was all the time. Yeah. So athletically, he would have been perfect. And it's really a shame that he didn't stay at Texas and work out as the solution to this problem, because he was lethal as a receiver.
Yeah, he was.
They can, you, that's the kind of guy you want. You can find somebody else like that. It's hard though. Teams, you know, it'd have been easier to find. It'd probably have been easier if it's like, we need a bludgeon. Because there's probably like a bludgeon.
You can go to some FCS and just find a guy that's ready to hit dudes.
Or like just some like Big Ten dude, you know?
Yeah. Like, oh, this is a good point, right? Manchester Red asks, no, he played a little running back in high school, but any chance Ogbo ever slimmed down to be a full-time tight end? Please don't flame me. Ian mentions Ogbo in his article, I think.
Yeah. If Arch Manning is injured this season, they're really going to want a good blocking tight end, because Trey Owens is not going to offer them the same options as Manning does with, like, quarterback option.
Yeah.
But I think you can solve for that with jumbo tight end. So Ogbo, and honestly, maybe even another guy too, like another young guy that Jaden Chapman, I think, is usually the guy, or whoever. Well, maybe Nick Brooks or something, freshman. Hey, Nick, you want to play this year? This is jersey number 83 or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
They may do that. But that's like a – they really need the weapon at tight end.
So how do you – we're now it's just time to start back-channeling agents, right? Trying to find that guy.
This one, they have – it's weird to me that they haven't made any overtures that we've reported or noticed to the Stanford guy.
Yeah.
Stanford guy would have been an easy fit. Maybe they have – someone else in mind? I don't know.
That's what you hope, right?
They need to have somebody else in mind, if that's not.
Well, I think they knew they needed a tight end regardless prior to Washington even getting hurt. So I would hope that due diligence has been, maybe not two guys, but to find one guy, and I have no inside stuff on this, but you would think that they would be able to figure that out. And also, any agent can just watch the Texas media and be like, Texas just said they need a defensive tackle, a wide receiver, and a tight end. You know, there's messaging that gets out here, and then the agents can start figuring out who should move where.
This is partly why I'm like, you know what, you're probably right. You can get by at running back. Some of these other needs are like really glaring.
Yeah, I feel better at running back. That's a big change with Christian Clark coming on, and Clark's my favorite back in the room just from his high school tape. So I like that. I feel much more comfortable with running back, but tight end, man, it's tricky. And it's a big part of the offense too, man. It's not like Sark's going to go 10 personnel because he doesn't have a tight end.
He could,
but
could. It would be better to have a bad A tight end.
Yeah.
Who is barely more than a receiver as a blocker.
Yeah.
Just that getting that barely would go a long ways towards different schemes.
Yeah. We'll see, man. I am excited for when the spring ends and then all the, you know, Texas looking at this tight end. That part sounds fun.
The not having to brainstorm article ideas super hard every day because there's all these tight end prospects to write about. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that'll be nice. I believe the unexpected transfer of Nye Black caught the staff off guard with him. He was able to pass Kester in depth to the room.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
They didn't seem like they were necessarily in love with him, though. So.
Yeah, just the amount of times you saw him on the field, too, you know. And he would show up when he was on the field, you would notice, but it's kind of tricky.
Juan Davis, I don't know how good a receiver Juan Davis was because they never threw him the ball. I felt like he could have done a lot more.
Juan Davis, watch his high school tape. He could have absolutely done a lot more in the receiver.
If he'd gotten a red shirt in there somewhere and he were back this year, this would be much smaller problem.
I agree. Dude, Juan Davis had some of my favorite tape. He was just like, he was an outside receiver, just moss, like straight moss. Like they are both standing still in the end zone. The ball is thrown and he just goes up and gets it. So yeah, Juan Davis had a lot more athleticism than we unlocked. And it was the same with Helm. If you watched him at Cherry Creek, you would see Helm was catching these.
He was catching
these big posts and stuff, and we didn't use him for that until last year, you know? So we kind of do some weird stuff with tight ends too. I don't feel like we always like maximize guys or maximize them for as long as we could have maximized them. So I didn't know that tight end recruiting got a 5-star. Hopefully we can land out on modern day. So we might end up getting some – might be a tough year, but going forward, tight end seems like it's getting a little bit more figured out. There were a couple years there where we were just missing on like a Deuce Robinson or whatever and weren't really taking a lot.
Yeah.
It's kind of catching up to us.
Deuce is playing receiver anyway, I think, last I heard.
Yeah.
You know who else that USC took, that Lake Travis kid? Lake McCree.
Yeah.
Be nice to have him on campus now. If he has any eligibility left, he would have been just fine. You're going to end up looking for like a guy like that now anyways.
We just need to go through on three and like – we need to go through on three, sort by Texas. Sort by Texas and sort by tight end. And then just look for the past 3 years – tight ends that were in Texas but went away. Because it's like, it seems like that's a huge, you know, you get AD Mitchell back, that kind of thing. It's like, that's what I'm looking. It's like, look for kids that are, you know, in the ACC that want to come home type of thing. That's generally a fairly good lead.
Yep.
So that's what I'll scour to somehow still incorrectly predict who the tight end will be. All right. Anything from the presser besides that that you thought was pressing?
It seemed like he was highlighting defensive back as a position of strength.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Sometimes that kind of made me a little bit nervous. Like the other week, Sark was like, we are not skipping the spring game to protect our roster from tampering. And then it was like, oh, that's 100%. They're skipping the spring game because they want to protect the roster from tampering. Like yeah. If he's issuing a denial like that, that means it's
real. Well, I thought that was because basically Matt Rhule came out before him, said that he was doing it for tampering. And then all the national media's headlines said when Sarkisian did it, Sarkisian Rhule ending spring games because of tampering. And it wasn't, they basically took what Rhule had said and applied it to Sark. So I think that's why they were clarifying on that one specifically. Don't get me wrong. I think there's a percentage of this 100% that is tampering.
But why does he care?
I think it's because we're young and we're going to look bad. Like, that's really why what it feels like. Because he's everything, even in his presser, the whole thing is we are having to coach every guy, every rep. I mean, he said it like 3 or 4 different ways, how young we are.
I think it's like, what if we – throw 7 touchdowns to Parker Livingstone.
And then he gets benched for the new transfer.
And he gets benched for a transfer for a year. But then somebody that's going to take advantage of revenue sharing comes in and offers Livingstone $1 million to come be the guy immediately at another school.
Yeah.
Like everybody's got to understand the revenue sharing is a game changer because there are all these Big Ten schools.
We could pluck 1 or 2 guys, no problem.
Major TV revenues coming in, and they were not spending money like that when it was just up to the donors.
Yeah.
They were not – their donors do not spend like SEC donors. And so all of a sudden they got SEC walking around money, you know.
Yeah.
And they have to spend it on their athletes. So it's like, oh, let's go pluck. Let's go overpay for this guy or that guy that we can't get.
I think it's youth. I think it's injuries, like Sark said, from a long season. And I think, of course, there's going to be a factor that, you know, you can end up showcasing guys, right?
They lost that Austin Jordan, who was awesome at nickel in the spring game last year, and they lost him to TCU. I think Oregon maybe allegedly made a run at Jahdae Barron before 2022 when they saw him in the spring game in nickel.
Yeah, two years ago.
When Jahdae Barron hadn't really done anything yet, and then you watched the spring game and it was like, this guy's gonna be the key to our defense. He's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, yeah, they made a run at him.
Oops, gotta make sure we hang on. I think that's a huge deal. Maybe Nick Brooks. Oh, this guy, they got this like tackle that's not gonna play for a couple years, but he actually looks pretty darn good.
Yeah. I think there's a fact. I think it's multifactorial, but I'm not going to deny that you're not going to watch another. But also, man, I think they know who's going to be good. Like, I mean, you saw the Connor Stallion stuff. I mean, these guys are running spy networks. Like, because some GA, like, you know, it's so like everybody knows everybody. So it's just like some weird GA is married to the husband of a GA at whatever school and they can ask about him. Like, I feel like there's ways of figuring out. Now, seeing on tape, sure, but I don't think it's purely to stop tampering.
I don't know, man. Sometimes it seems like these things are really sophisticated, and then it turns out it's not that sophisticated. So,
well, I don't think it's like I'm just saying that they want to limit injuries. We're going to be young and tampering.
Nobody even gets hurt in these things anyway, though.
Well, I know that is kind of their excuse every time that drives me nuts. And they're like, we're still doing scrimmages. It's like, okay, well, if the logic's like not getting hurt, then you would actually cancel all scrimmages. But, and even before pads, we have guys dropping like flies, dude. So, yeah, it's tricky. So the big things that stuck out to me, like you said, were the positions of need. Said some good stuff about Arch Manning. J.D. Piquel pointed out on one of the threads on the board that Sark has been like really complimentary of Arch. And sometimes, you know, coaches will purposely like try to tamper or temper expectations there. And it doesn't feel like Sark's been doing that. It feels like he's been very upfront of like, yeah, he's a leader. Yeah, we think he's good at this. There hasn't been a lot of like, hold on, man, he hasn't played yet type messaging.
Yeah, that I've noticed though that Sark usually, that's his approach to almost everything, is more to like take the challenge on directly.
Yeah.
So I think JD is right, but I don't know if that's like a, I don't know if that's like a very unique thing for Sark with this particular player. I think he's kind of done that for a lot of guys.
Did he do it for Quinn? I know he would say Quinn's the quarterback, so he would like tamper any expectations of like a quarterback battle. But I would have, what was he saying about Quinn when Quinn was coming in and super young?
I mean, it wasn't like this.
Yeah,
but it was pretty complimentary, I think. It was, I bet it was more complimentary than maybe it even should have been.
Yeah, for sure.
It turned out.
Another thing that stuck out, DJ Campbell. And we're also hearing that in Eric's practice report. So he's taking on the leadership role, all that stuff that we want to see from DJ so he can go to the NFL, maximize that crazy athleticism he has. Cool. Any final things, Ian, or are you good?
Nope. I'm excited for the moment when that spring portal opens, which might be absolutely insane.
Yeah, because nothing happened in the winter. So it's like hopefully they're building it up.
Everybody is expecting it to go wild this spring.
Yeah.
It may not live up to those expectations because like you probably are not gonna like get your quarterback this late.
But, you know what I love about some of the injuries going on, though, is, like, these guys are getting a ton of reps in spring, and that's going to, like, the depth they are at a lot of positions, and that limits people getting disgruntled. So I do like that regard, that, like, all the young receivers are getting reps, some of the linebackers were getting into their depth, that kind of stuff. That takes away some of the sell of a poaching school of being like, hey, man, we know you're a starter talented, but you're not even getting reps. So I like that part.
That's kind of ideal because then they're happy and then you grab somebody in the spring portal and they don't jump in.
Right.
No, no, I'm good. I got this. And then you get them both.
Exactly. Yeah. The evil side to coaching. Mwaha. All right. Guys, you need to go to InsideTexas.com. We're offering $1 for 4 months. That's insane. It's going to get you to fall ball. You're going to get all the recruiting stuff. All baseball team number two in the nation, baby. New hire in basketball. Everybody's feeling good. The future's bright. Softball's killing it. We have coverage of everything, guys. $1 for 4 months. Hell of a deal. And you can always read Ian's articles. Thank you guys for hanging out with us. I enjoyed it, chat. Y'all have a wonderful day. And... hook 'em, y'all.